playing even though people are still coming in. So here we go with this is supposed to be a session. That the billing is Scott Joplin, and that was just to get you in here. No, that's really kind of what it's based on. But and I'm going to play, for those of you who were at the concert, I played this at the concert a couple days ago as well. But it's a good way to start because it's Scott Joplin's first hit number, and it's called The Maple Leaf Rag. It came out in 1899. Published in 1899, I said it was a big hit. It was, but that doesn't mean 3 million copies in a year or something. And it was sheet music as well, not recordings of any kind, of course. And Joplin, which was unusual for an African American man, to say the least, of his era at this point, got a deal with his publisher, a man named John Stark, who had an office and a company in St. Louis. Started out with Joplin, though, in Sedalia, Missouri, and that's where Maple Leaf was published. And he made a deal in which he was to receive a royalty, a small royalty, for each copy of the music sold. That was really, really unusual, and most of the publishers wouldn't give you that kind of a deal at all. But Joplin was fortunate that way. This piece did not sell more than 900 copies in the first year, from 1899 into the next year. And then over the next couple of decades, it started to pick up, and it eventually got up to something like 500,000 copies of sheet music. And this meant that people were taking this stuff home and trying to play it. And in fact, that's what it was all about. Joplin, then, was the exception, and I'm going to play a couple more of his pieces. He was born in probably 1868, but it could have been late 1867. And so that means he was no spring chicken, really, by the time he published this in 1899. He was in his 30s. Let's see, what else can I say that's different from the current pop scene? Just about everything about it. But it is the very beginning of American popular music. And, you know, it's really the beginning of the great power of this music to kind of go out and take over the world, almost, as it's done over this long span of time. Play a couple more things by Joplin. This one is a waltz, and it's called Bethina. Forgot to say it's a syncopated waltz, meaning it's got that kind of rhythm with ragtime, but it's a waltz, ragtime waltz. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. The second one there was called Elite Syncopations, and that one of the things that used to be kind of cool about this sheet music, especially publications by Joplin's publisher, John Stark, were the ads that were on the back. John Stark, he fancied himself a good advertising copywriter, and some of the stuff is pretty colorful. And this one, he says, I think it's this one, it could be Chrysanthemum, but anyway, it's a great quote from John Stark on the back of a Joplin piece. He says, "The product of a dream by the composer. Details available upon contacting the publisher." And he says, "The syncopation in the final strain is actually frenzied." And audiences like a little frenzy, that's why I like to play that. John Stark, a remarkable guy, and I have some of his sheet music up here, which we probably won't have time to look at, but I'll keep it with me during all these sessions if you want to take a look at some of these sheet music covers. We need to keep moving, though, because we've got a lot of ground to cover. And I was talking about the music. I think the basic thing about it is the rhythm. That's the thing with American music. And I'm going to put you guys to the test here pretty soon. When they start talking about ragtime and analyzing it, all this is fairly simple stuff. Maybe we start to think of the simple things as being too easy, but they're not. They're the most profound things. The term syncopation comes up. Now, what does that mean? I'm not going to try to explain it. I'm going to show you by playing something familiar for you that's usually syncopated and that most of you probably heard. I'll play it unsyncopated. See what you think. You may not even recognize it. I guess you probably do recognize it, but it sure sounds boring, doesn't it? It's pretty dull. And of course, it's The Entertainer, which was from this movie, which was used by Marvin Hamlisch in, I think it was 1974, a film called The Sting. It didn't do it like that. It was syncopated. I'm not going to play the whole thing for you because it's not supposed to be a concert, but this is kind of what it was supposed to sound like, at least that part of it. Said the rhythm is the biggest deal in anything to do with real American music, American popular music of any kind. And it's simple to see what's going on with ragtime because it's piano music. You got your two hands, and the beat is there in the left, and the right hand is the one that does something else, plays in unexpected and unusual places rhythmically between these regular beats in the left hand. Simple. But that simple idea is at the bottom of everything, so that's why I like to kind of hammer that point home. And I think, what was I going to do next? I was going to go to another composer, actually. And this is a guy named Joseph Lamb, who was a disciple of Joplin's. And one reason to talk about him is because he was a great composer and idolized Scott Joplin. But another very interesting reason is that he was an Irish-American guy. And he lived in New Jersey. But he loved Joplin's music, and he did play piano when he was younger. He was quite a bit younger than Joplin by about 20 years, actually. And Joplin became a successful composer, and Lamb got a hold of his music. And by 1907, Joplin was living in New York, and his publisher, John Stark, had an office there and a music shop. And Joe Lamb, who was from New Jersey, as I said, he would go to the Stark music shop to pick up all of the latest Scott Joplin pieces and any other really good ragtime pieces. Mr. Stark would be in the office to tell him and advise him on what to buy. And one day Joe stopped in there and was looking through the bins and asking about Joplin's music and others. And there was somebody else in the shop at this point. It's a guy sitting over in the corner, African-American guy. Turned out that it was Scott Joplin himself, which flabbergasted Joe Lamb. And they got to talking, and Joe told Scott Joplin, the great Joplin, that he himself really loved Joplin's music and that he was a pianist and a composer himself. And he said, what I want to do is write music exactly like yours. So they became friendly, and pretty soon Joplin listened to some of his stuff. And to make a long story short, Joe Lamb ended up publishing several really beautiful pieces with John Stark at Joplin's recommendation. Yeah, but what it shows, of course, is that the music was really spreading pretty fast and jumping across all kinds of divides, racial and otherwise. So that's one point. Another is it's just beautiful stuff. So here's one of Joe Lamb's pieces called American Beauty. Thank you. American Beauty by Joe Lamb. I've got one more Joplin piece to play for you. I should have played that one before I did the Lamb, but it doesn't matter. And you'll recognize this because it's also from that film, The Sting. It was used. By the way, Marvin Hamlisch, who arranged and did the score for that movie, got the Academy Award and all that. I decided I liked him because at the award ceremony he said, "This is for Scott Joplin," while he was holding up the Oscar. That made sense. Anyway, here is a piece you'll probably recognize. It's a good thing to hear as well because it's got this Latin American content, which has always been a big deal in our music, in fact. You know, all the way from the very beginning, even Scott Joplin. So here it is. It's called Solace. Thank you. things about Joplin's music that was kind of interesting, because when you think about the ragtime era, it's not really right to think about it as all music that sounds like these Scott Joplin pieces. It was not. Joplin was trying to write things that were drawn from a certain vernacular. The vernacular was to play the piano a certain way, and that was just how you played if you were going to play any kind of popular music. And Joplin came out of this, tried to use the same kind of thing in the same rhythmic feel, but to write things that were every bit as well constructed and thought out as anything by a European classical composer. That's the direction he took it. And so a lot of things did not sound like the Joplin pieces. It's really the music that he distilled from this tradition. I think we were talking about syncopation here, and it's time for us to try an experiment. This is something I do with school kids, so you guys should be able to hack it. And actually, they do pretty well, so they do. The thing about this music that it seems really hard, it's really interesting to me that culturally what's going on here, but it's very difficult for many of the audiences that I play for, including those who really love the music, to clap on the right beats. So we can get started with that, I think. But really, just to get things started, let me just encourage everybody to clap along with me, and we'll count to four, or I will. You don't have to do the counting. And believe me, there's a point to this. Yeah, you'll find out, I think. And that's how we'll establish that ground beat that I'm talking about, which has to do, in ragtime at least, with the left hand on the piano. And it's always there. It's what you lean on when you do everything else. But let's just see what happens. Here we go. I'll get you started. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Let's keep it going. 2, 4. 2, 4. 2, 4. 2, 4. 2, 4. Okay, now we're accenting the beat that is normally when I emphasize 2 and 4. It's really hard for just about any Lutheran audience to keep doing that. 2, 4, 2, 4, 2, 4, 2. Okay, keep going. I'm going to take this section right here. You guys keep on with that. This section here is going to do something different. It's about as far as I dare to take it. But it's interesting, because what we're doing there is it's pretty elementary, but it is a kind of polyrhythmic stuff that is the basis of this kind of music. And I'm going to move to another part of the country now from Joplin, head out to the East Coast. And Michael, you have a track there. I'll let you know in just a second when to push the button on that. This guy's name is UB Blake. I'm going to listen to a recording of one of his pieces here in just a second. He was from Baltimore, and he actually considered what he played to be ragtime, and it was. It has a lot in common with Joplin's music, but it's interesting. I'll show you an example in a minute of what happened when they asked UB in his old age why he didn't record any of Scott Joplin's music, and he was finally talked into it, and you'll find that interesting. But I want to illustrate two things with this recording. One is, again, the rhythm. This is actually a modern recording, 1971, although I've got it in an MP3 file, sorry. And It's Gunther Schuller and the New England Conservatory Ragtime Ensemble playing one of UB's tunes, and I'm going to inflict a recording on every one of these class sessions, but one track only, I promise. And the tune is called the Charleston Rag, and it makes a couple of different points. One is the rhythm is fantastic in this, and Schuller really did a great job on these ragtime things. And secondly, Joplin's music, although we think of it as piano music, and that's the way he wrote it, was almost instantly also orchestrated for sort of stage bands, theater orchestras, and that's the same with any music by any of the ragtime guys. And that's often the way it was done and the way it was played. And this, so this is a good example with reasonably good fidelity. And here it is. It's called the Charleston Rag. It's a UB Blake rag. That's the right response. Yeah, that was wonderful. Should have brought him out to the front. That was really great, actually. Okay, so we're talking about this this question, the Joplin era, and the fact that not all these guys thought about it the same way. UB was a little bit younger than Joplin. He was born in 1883. Joplin, as I mentioned, 1868. So the difference there, and but also he's from a different part of the country, Baltimore, and very different the way you played the piano out there in this vernacular style that people call it ragtime. It had a very different rhythmic feel, and it was a lot flashier. But really just the basic rhythmic feel was different. It's a lot more sneaky or something. So they come to UB Blake, was still active when he was in his 90s. And when he was 86, he made a wonderful double LP for, I think it was Columbia, and of all his solo piano pieces. It was fantastic. And he had a brand new career, about the fourth or fifth one he'd had in his lifetime, as a talk show guest. And he was asked about Joplin's music, because it's all ragtime, must be the same stuff. And he kind of resisted the idea of putting out any kind of recordings of Joplin's music. And he didn't exactly say why, but people were kind of persistent with him, so he finally went ahead with it. And I don't really know the whole thing. You don't need all of it to see what was going on and how different it sounds with UB's interpretation. A little while ago, and I'll do the first part of it again so you can hear it, I played Joplin's piece, Elite Syncopations. This is one of the ones that UB recorded. So I'll give you the first little bit of it so you can remember what that sounded like. And then we'll go on to, I'll try to play UB's interpretation of that first section. Different. I guess part of the point there is not just that UB didn't want to copy somebody or something, but the rhythmic feel is completely different. And it was a strange idea to UB Blake, being from the time and place that he was from, to take somebody else's piece of what was essentially, I guess he would have thought of it as popular music. He had great respect for Joplin. This had nothing to do with what he thought of him as a composer or anything else. But he just wouldn't have thought of taking any piece of sheet music like this that you bought that was actually like a popular song almost or something and playing it exactly as written. No, you play it your own way. That was actually the way things really were for most pianists who were working in UB's era. Of course, he's doing this in something like some early 80s or something. He was playing it like that, so it's kind of interesting. That's how he remembered it. Let me play one other piece by UB Blake, and this something he wrote later on, not in the early days. And the title of this is Dictes on 7th Avenue. And that means swells, guys who are dressed up and kind of parading around on 7th Avenue in New York, I guess. Anyway, UB Blake. Thank you. Okay, now it's time for you to ask me some questions. You know, it's, I guess the conclusion is that we're getting started in a saga. This, you don't have to come to all these sessions to get anything out of them, but this is kind of in the first chapter, and I can do is I can play you some more stuff. That's part of the thing. But if you have any questions, and I don't mind what the topic is, it'd be nice if it had something to do with the class. But yeah. Yeah, Joplin actually, that's interesting. The question is, how did they get this on paper, Joplin's pieces? And he actually was musically literate. He was at pains to become that way so that he could write the stuff down. And the things that were published of his were done extremely carefully. And I'm not sure how much of it was actually Joplin's work and how much of it was just the fact that the publisher was being very careful to get the rhythms right, because a lot of the early ragtime publications that you see, they just couldn't figure out how to write down these syncopated rhythms. These arrangers were not used to that, and it's pretty outlandish, and sometimes you just have to try to figure out what they mean rhythmically. But in Joplin's case, it's all perfect. Somebody, very probably him, in fact, I'm pretty sure it was, did that job. And it's interesting, I think it was 1908. By that time, his music was pretty well known, and he was actually making a kind of reasonable amount of money on it. He was never a rich man. He wasn't a wildly successful person at all financially, but these publications were coming out, and he was hearing them played by people in a rather irreverent manner, maybe like Yubi, but not as good, and just or too fast. He wanted those tempos to be held down as well, and it got to the point where he was really disgusted. So he came out with around 1908. He came out with something, an instruction book on how to play the stuff right, and it's in the form of exercises for the piano, and it's called Scott Joplin's School of Ragtime. And I wish I had brought along, I could read you some quotes, but it was full of things like, ragtime is never to be played fast. If it's played too fast, then the intoxicating effect of the rhythms or something to that effect is lost. Very kind of didactic, and I think they sold some copies of this thing too, because the exercises were kind of fun. But it shows that even from the very beginning, Joplin's music was not being taken literally by lots of people. The tempo was a big problem, at least in his mind, because people played Maple Leaf Rag, for example, way too fast. And, but that was very tempting as well, if you could play it at all. Why not show off? I mean, he was fighting a losing battle there with a lot of these people. Nowadays, we see it rather differently and think that we should try to do it the way he wanted it. But back then, who knows? So we'd see that's a good question. You want me to talk for at least an hour? Yes.
Do you collect sheet music or covers or copies from the era?
Well, you know, I brought along just a couple of those. I thought there were more in this little folder. That'll teach me not to take anything for granted. So I just have about 3 or 4 pieces. But yes, I do. But I'm not one of the big time collectors at all. I just want to try to play this stuff and get a hold of it in any way that I possibly can. But I know a lot of people who are big collectors and who have all these publications that I brought are all published by John Stark, who was Joplin's publisher, and they're pretty colorful. I can show them to you after the class. That's probably the easiest thing. Yeah.
This last piece, maybe like starting to sound Gershwin-like. Is there a connection?
Probably. This thing he does at the beginning of it, you have to keep in mind that this was actually written much later, and it's not from the ragtime era, and in fact, he had a tremendous respect for Gershwin, who in turn had a tremendous respect for him, but that intro. He probably wouldn't have done exactly that back in the old days. He would be influenced by Gershwin just as much as Gershwin was by him. It's not a one-way street. At the same time, I should emphasize, though, that this, most of the stuff that I really love is by black composers and players. It's just the way I feel it. Yeah. Well, actually, let's do the memory and ear thing first. It's a combo, actually. I don't remember a time when I wasn't trying to play something on the piano. And I'd watch my mother. She would sit up there, and I would sit on the floor and look at her. It's a long time ago. She played her recital pieces, Clair de Lune, and Rustle of Spring, and that kind of stuff. So that was the first piano music I knew about. I would get up there and try to play. She found a teacher for me, I was her very first piano student, this woman. Logistics were hard, and we couldn't get into town to get somebody else. But she was probably good. But at the same time, whenever she was taking me through scales and all the stuff that she could figure out to do, and she'd panic and take the train to St. Paul and get some more things and bring them to me, and had her fingers crossed, she told me later, that she didn't ruin my life or something. But I copied what she played, and that was one thing that I was doing that she wasn't aware of. So I wasn't really learning how to read music very well. But it's always been a combination. I've always wanted to play something like this. My dad had some music around the house by swing bands, Second World War popular music, basically, and Benny Goodman and Artie Shaw and all those people. And then he had a few things by black people as well. Duke Ellington was a big one around the house. So it got to my blood. The first jazz pianist I ever heard, for anybody who knows anything about that really made an impression on me, I was probably like 9 or 10 years old. It was Teddy Wilson, who was on one of the Benny Goodman records my dad had, with no personnel on the label, so I didn't know who it was. But that kind of, he had impeccable rhythm. It was really beautiful playing, so I didn't know anything about it, but I just felt that rhythm somehow, I think. So that, it's what you hear when you're a kid. But yeah, it's a combination. A lot of the things that I play, if I'm doing the New Orleans, the Joplin stuff is different, but when we get to Jelly Roll Morton and something in another session, that you're supposed to improvise on those things. That was part of it, and the inspiration of the moment was a big part of it. So you didn't do anything the same way the next time. And sometimes I forget about that in the Joplin. If you know those pieces, I didn't really stick to it. But anyway, somebody else? Yeah. Nobody's sure. Nobody knows. But some people used to say, well, because the rhythm is all raggedy. But it's not, It's very precise. So that's not really, nobody really knows for sure. There's a piece of sheet music that was actually published by Joplin, was the composer, before Maple Leaf. And it's called Original Rags on the cover. And then it says, Rags Picked by Scott Joplin, and some people then said, oh, that must be because he, the rags, meaning scraps of music that were chosen by him and put together in this format of several strains, and maybe it's ragtime because it's an assemblage of different, diverse elements or something. I don't think that's it either, but nobody really knows exactly. There are all kinds of theories. Languages. It's hard to put your finger on anyway. Anybody else? You can ask me anything within reason. Yeah. Well, not enough. But nobody had to force me to practice. But I should have been a lot more. But still, I liked it. I enjoyed doing it. But a lot of it would be trying to learn things by ear instead of my lesson, The second teacher I had was a retired concert pianist. And she was the widow of the postmaster in the nearest town of any size, which was pretty small. It was Stillwater, Minnesota. But she was a retired concert artist. And I think she had to quit when she got married, which was probably too bad. But she was the first live performer I ever heard. I first lesson with her, live classical music. And by that time, I was something like 14. And she played Claire de Lune, which I was trying to learn from my other teacher. And it was like, you know, it's another world. Before that, I had no idea. And that was an inspiration, really. But never stopped wanting to not practice, but play something else, jazz or something, in the back, in the T-shirt. Well, you know, there's not much evidence about it, but there's a piano roll of Maple Leaf in which he kind of does a few little decorations that aren't there in the published music, and it's fairly certain that these are exactly the notes that he played, but there isn't much variation there at all, very little. And there's a new one that's been discovered of one of his waltzes. It's a recent find. In which he does some slightly different things, but I shouldn't say this. I don't mean to. I hope you understand what I'm trying to say. He's a great composer, and he was remarkable. Had a remarkable vision, and some of you might know more about him than we've talked about here. Maybe you don't. But at the end of his career, he was trying valiantly to get an opera into a performance in New York. And he'd written this thing. It was basically it's kind of a folk opera or something. It's there's a lot of this kind of ragtime stuff in the score, and he never could get this to be taken seriously by any producer or anybody else. And it just kind of foundered. And I'm sure it was a major frustration for him. But what he was trying to do was make classical music out of the raw materials that we had, and it was a great idea, because before that, most of American music that was supposed to be serious music, they were copying European composers. You know, it's just that was considered serious, and all this vernacular stuff was not. So Joplin really had a vision there. Now, to get back to your question, the point I was going to make about this was that he was a fine composer and an excellent musician, but there's some evidence to indicate that he wasn't a very good piano player. You know, he was adequate, but at least the witnesses who have been found in old newspaper articles and things have said that. And it could be his playing had deteriorated by the time they heard him. That's possible, because he had syphilis, and he died of that. In 1917, so it could have been that. So that might have affected his playing. But yeah. My favorite piece. What is it? Oh, you want the favorite Joplin piece. Yeah. Heliotrope, that's a beautiful one. I'm not sure if I can remember the whole thing. So let me think about something. My favorite piece, you know, that's a tough question. Are you going to come to any of the other sessions? Because, yeah. And although I could talk for hours, I probably shouldn't. I think, is it 7? Yeah, we got to get out of here. Okay. This is something I composed myself. And it's based on some folk music from Ecuador. It's a ragtime piece. Thank you. sorry. We've gone way too long, so we really need to move things around, so be ready by 7:30. But I really appreciate your being here, and it can only get better. So if you have time, or you know, I realize there's a lot to do while you're here, but if you have time, we have some more sessions. The next one is on the blues. That's it. That's the whole topic, blues. So I'll see you there. I can't remember when it is, but thanks very, very much.